This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Glory be to the Creator, in whose hands, not hands like mine and yours, in whose hands there is the complete dominion. Dominion of what? The micro and the macro. The seen and the unseen. The discovered and what is yet to be discovered. What we call and define the phenomena of existence. Glory be to that Creator, in whose hands there is the power and dominion over all of that. And He has power over all things. That means His influence covers all things. It is He, that Creator, who created the death and created the life in order to see which one of you would be the best in your conduct. So what is this saying? What is this verse saying 1,424 years ago? That this Creator has put us into this world in order for us to go through a series of tests, in order to see through competition, through pressure, through confrontation, which one of us would be the best in our conduct. And how can we prove that pressure brings about the best? How do diamonds come about? Anybody know? Through pressure. Millions of years of pressure. Because the same element that diamonds come from, if it's not millions of years of pressure, the only thing you can do with it is burn it. It's called coal, isn't it? Coal that you put in the furnace and use it for fuel. It's the same, it's a fossil fuel. Diamonds is the same element, but over years of pressure, it becomes this crystallized thing that has the most value. Women know it better than we do. Diamonds. How is gold? Where does gold come from? Is gold just sitting on top of the earth, or is gold inside the earth? Is iron outside the earth or inside the earth? Everything that has a major value. Where are pearls? Floating on the ocean? No. Got to dive deep for them. Everything of value in this world comes from effort. If you want honey, you cannot get the honey without getting stung by the bees. If you want flowers, roses, you want to grow them and pick them, you must get pricked by the thorns. Everything in life that has a value will cost you. This education or this miseducation that you are engaged in is going to cost you. You will get a certificate. You will graduate. But it would have cost you some valuable time, and that's why you want to get paid when you finish. No one, no group has come into being on their own, nor can they obtain or harness the resources which they require on their own. No one. Absolutely no one. No one has complete determination or power over themselves or others. No one. Even the human being on their own cannot control their thinking. As you sit here right now, you're listening to me, but your mind is drifting from time to time into other things because you can't control it. As you're sitting here, you're blinking. You can try to keep your eyes open. I tell you what, anyone can keep their eyes open without blinking for 1 minute, I give you 10 pounds. Just 1 minute. Look at him. You can't do it. Because blinking is a natural response. It's a motor response. It's not something that happens, you understand, because you will it to happen. It's just natural. Because if you didn't blink, your pituitary glands would not excrete what it's supposed to, so that the eyes would get washed. And then the eyeball would dry out. And if it dried out, it would crack. And you would go blind. So don't try to keep your eyes open to get that 10 pounds. See, even your bodily functions are happening without you thinking. Look while you're sitting here. You're breathing. You ain't asking your lungs to breathe. Your heart is beating from the time you were born. Even before you were fashioned inside the womb, we know now from an embryological study, we know now that the brain, the spine, and the heart is the first part of the embryo, isn't it? and that heart is pumping. At 3 months, it's pumping. You can hear it pumping inside the womb. Pumping from there until the time the person comes out, grows up, become arrogant, and die. Who is controlling that heart? Who started pumping? Who can create another heart? No one. From the first time that medicine discovered the phenomena of the eyeball, the phenomena of the heart, the phenomena of the brain, they started right then trying to make a new heart, trying to make a new brain, trying to make a new eyeball. Every year, science spends $78 million on technology to try to recreate, duplicate the eyeball. They have not done it. Some nice cameras, but not the eyeball. They tried to duplicate the heart. They made a Jarvik heart, a nuclear heart, a bionic heart, but all of them pop out the chest. The heart doesn't, the chest doesn't keep it, it rejects it. And the longest person that has lived with one of those hearts in their chest is 14 years. It don't work. Nothing works like the heart that we have. They just don't keep pumping. And they have created a robot with almost like a human eye. But you know what the problem was? They couldn't get it to blink. And then when they was able to put a motor in it to make it blink like the human eye, they couldn't make it blink with the right calibration. So sometimes blink and it closed. Sometimes blink too fast. So they couldn't get to keep the right blink. So they couldn't create, they couldn't even manufacture the blink, let alone all the other functions of the eye. So what about the brain? What makes us think? They couldn't create the brain. They got computers that's bigger than this whole campus. Computers that could not contain just what the human mind, your mind or mine, what we have recorded, what we have thought, and the functions that take place in only 1/10 of our brain. If they had a computer as big as all this whole campus here, it could not contain just what is in my brain or your brain, that 1/10 of it. So, the thinking, the blinking, the bodily functions, what the kidney does, those 187 functions that the kidney does, just like that, continuously, just like that. And whoever designed the human body had such intelligence to know that people was going to eat the wrong foods, people going to live the wrong life, and they might need a spare. So we got how many kidneys? You got two. So if one go bad, the body can still run off of one. But if both of them go bad, you got to get on dialysis. Once you get on dialysis, you know that's it. I mean, they're going to make you comfortable and everything, but that's it. Because once those poisons back up inside the body, that's it. So we live according to an immutable law. We live according to irreversible dynamics. Age, time. If there was nothing else that human beings was captured into, enslaved to, and subordinate to, it would be the clock. Then in a little while they're going to hand me a note. Say, 15 minutes. See, we're regulated by time. We're trying to get everything done in time. Because time captures everything. Time contains and harnesses everything. If there's anything that regulates us and subordinates us, it's time. And if the Creator, the divine knowledge or intelligence or God or whatever we want to call, if had no other power of expression upon us, time would be enough. Time would be enough. Therefore, if that is the case, I say to you, all people are subject and subordinate in the same way, shape, or form. All people. All human beings have been designed, and everything in creation has been designed, from the micro to the macro. From the micro to the macro. Micro from not just the atom, now we know the smallest, what is the smallest particle now? What is the smallest identifiable particle? What is it called? A quark, isn't it? Maybe it's a quantum quark. You know, somebody else will find something, be a micro quantum quark. They keep on looking down, 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 down. Keep looking until they find something smaller than that. It was the atom. It no longer is the atom. Then we look out. There's something that has been identified recently called the Ego Nebula. Anybody ever heard of the Ego Nebula? The Ego Nebula. What is the Ego Nebula? This is a cluster of galaxies that is 7,000 light years away. 7,000 light years. What does that sound like? That's not like a goalpost. 7,000 light years. That's 86,000 miles per second, right? In a minute. In an hour. In 24 hours. In 7 days. In 30 days. In a year, 7,000 times. Now, how fast can light travel at 86,000 miles per second in 7,000 light years? This Ego Nebula, Hubble said, is where light went out, hit, and bounced back. And that is the furthest that they have measured the cluster of galaxies. That's the furthest side of the universe. Yet he said that this Ego Nebula, which is what? A cluster of galaxies, not a cluster of stars. Because our Earth is a planet. It is not a star. Our sun is what? A star. It has 9 or 11 family of planets that go around it because of its energy. And it is one of the smallest stars in what galaxy? The Milky Way. And the Milky Way is a relatively small galaxy that's made up of billions of stars. And the Milky Way is one galaxy that is part of a cluster of stars, a cluster of galaxies that we can identify, called the amoeba. But the Ego Nebula is 7,000 light years away, and it is the largest cluster of galaxies that we have been able to say it exists. That's the further side of the universe. Yet, Hubble and others who have discovered this phenomena said it is organized. It is designed. There is a set of dynamics. There is law. There is regulation even in that. So, in the quark, is there regulation? Is there design inside that quark? Yes. Is there regulation in that Ego Nebula? Yes. So I say to you, there is regulation, design, and proportion in everything in between. And if so, there must be a designer. You cannot say this building just dropped here. The rug didn't just come here. This didn't come here. The microphone didn't come here. You didn't just come here. Everything that's in here has been designed. If it's been designed, there must be what? A designer. If it is being sustained, maintained, there must be what? A sustainer. If it is being controlled, someone locks the doors. Someone put the people out. Someone collect the taxes. Somebody hires the people. Somebody is regulating, dominating. It must have what if it is controlled? A controller. If there is, this university is not just here. The staff is not just here. There is somebody who is over this university as what? A president, a chairman, a chief. I mean, there is somebody over this country. A king, a queen. So, if this universe, micro, macro, also has design, sustenance, control, it must also have what? A supreme power. It has to. You cannot say, for us, there's supreme power. In my house, I'm the boss. In my business, I run everything. Yeah, everybody say that. In your business, and on your job, there's a supervisor. I don't care if you work for McDonald's or whether you work something for the government. You work for Honeywell or you work for the government, whoever. There is a boss. Therefore, there has to be a supreme power over all of this orchestration. And it took knowledge to establish it. You cannot say that whoever did this was stupid. They wasn't shooting dice. They didn't do this at random. They figured this out. This has been designed. They have knowledge. There is science that regulates it. So, therefore, this massive, what we call the phenomena of existence, it must also have what? It must be maintained and sustained and designed by what? A knowledge. And that knowledge has got to be above our knowledge. Ultimately, all the creatures are subordinate to a creator. All the things that have been designed are subordinate to the designer. All the things that are sustained are subordinate to a sustainer. All the things that have a small amount of power or will are themselves subordinate to a supreme power. All the things that have some knowledge, like you and I, whether we're in grade school or whether we graduate with 5 PhDs, still, we got that knowledge from somebody. So there has to be a higher knowledge. Ultimately, you and I will take a position of responsibility somewhere, whether in our family, whether in our business, whether in working for the government. All of us will assume some type of responsibility and will become accountable, and therefore, similarly, in this creation, in this phenomena of existence, there also has to be ultimately what? A source of accountability. Now, to think otherwise is to be absurd, to be impractical, to be arrogant, to the point of ignorance. We all seek careers, undertakings, projects, marriage, education. At least we used to get married. We used to enter contracts, make commitments, etc. And we look for results. A woman is not going to marry a man that can't perform. Now, don't take out, don't go out nowhere. I'm talking about he got to bring the food, he got to pay the rent. He got to buy the food. If he want to be the man, come home and say, "I want my food on the table." If she said, "Look, you ain't bought no food. I'm the man. I want my bed made. I want my clothes clean. You ain't paid for no food. We living in a council house. You don't pay no rent here. So how are you going to be the man?" But if he is a man, that is, he's taking care of everything, then he may find a wife that is reasonably submissive and say she appreciates it, she recognizes who he is, and she's going to cook, clean, whatever the case, if that is the role that she chooses to play. Everybody look for results. A man look for results. A man marries a woman, he like her, but he wants children. And he may not want to live with a wife for 30 years if she don't have no children. That may not be a major thing for him. But generally, men and women come together to have families. Men can't have no babies. I mean, not until recently anyway. So we all look for results. We all look for consequences, reward, benefits, accounts payable and receivable. In every company, there's a manager. In every company, there's an owner. In every government, there's a king. In every place, there's a sovereign. In every family, there are parents. Used to be, anyway. You got mommy-mommy families and daddy-daddy families where ain't nobody the parent. But ultimately, even in those weird type of families, somebody is ultimately responsible, even if they don't say they are. All of this is to put forward this proposition that there has to be, for this complex and sophisticated universe, I say to you, there has to be, for this sophisticated and complex universe, this phenomena of existence, this earth and all the ecosystems and creatures which are countless, it cannot be the result of disorder and unaccountability. You can't tell me that order came out of chaos. If you say that, I say, okay, then you take, I'm not going to tell you to take a whole bunch of galaxies and make them, take that order and make it into care. I'm going to take something small. Take 10 marbles. 10 marbles. And put a number on each one of them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And put them inside a bag. Shake it up. Just 10. If you think that chaos come out of, order come out of chaos. Take 10 marbles, put them in a bag, shake them up. And without looking inside that bag, see if you can bring those marbles in order out. Just reach in the bag and pull out marble number 1, marble number 2, without looking. If you believe that order comes out of chaos, what do you think the chances are? From a mathematical point of view, from a computational point of view, what do you think the chances are of your being able to reach inside that bag and pull out those 10 marbles in order without looking inside that bag? What do you think the chances are? Well, Stephen Hawking said, the chances are 26 million to 1. That's what he said. Although he ain't no real authority. He ain't no real authority. He got some knowledge, but he's not no real authority. But I go with that computation. it means there's a whole lot of odds, which means that order does not come out of chaos. This earth with all its ecosystems and creatures that are countless could be the result of disorder and unaccountability. It cannot be. There's a purpose. There's a reason. There's a responsibility, and there's most certainly an accountability, and that stands to reason. There's an owner. In fact, that owner controls, sustains everything in the heavens and the earth. That owner has given to you and me more position than any other creature in this world. Monkeys and apes and baboons and orangutans and those kind of creatures, those, like Darwin said, we evolved from those people, from those things. That's what Darwin said. You know he said that. They still teaching it right here. Matter of fact, they got Darwin on the money. I don't understand what they got him on the money for. But they got him on the money and the queen on the other side. Anyway, Darwin said we came from the monkey. So I say, if we evolved from the monkey, shouldn't the monkey still be evolving? Wouldn't the monkey just stop evolving? So if we came from the monkey and we have evolved from that point to now, then we should still be evolving and the monkey should still be evolving. So at some stage, some monkeys should have figured out how we put them in the zoo, and they should be putting some of us in the zoo. Some monkeys by now should learn how to cry, should learn how to think, should learn how to do mathematics, should learn how to talk, should learn how to wear suits, build their own institutions, and they should have Oxford for monkeys, if they're still evolving. But monkeys have not evolved, nor have human beings really evolved. Because the mind of human beings is the same mind, and the mind of monkeys are the same. What is the difference between a monkey's mind and a human being's mind? It is not the issue of substance. It is the issue of intellect. Intellect distinguishes us from all other creatures. Intellect. And that's why you and I are responsible. If my pit bull jumps on you and bites you, you ain't going to take him to court, and the judge ain't going to give him 1 year. You never heard of that, because the pit bull is not responsible. They might put him to death, and they might give me a fine. So who's responsible, the dog or the owner? Why? Because I had intellect, I should be able to control my dog. That's the distinction between us and human beings. We have intellect. We have intelligence. Because we have intellect and intelligence, we become what? Responsible. And if we are responsible, we are also what? Accountable. Who are we accountable? Not just to each other. We are accountable to the one who gave us intellect and distinguished us from all other creatures. And you've been given all of this without paying for it. That's the beautiful thing about it. How many people here say that I paid for my life? I'm supposed to have what I have. I paid for it. Who can say that? Nobody. You didn't pay nothing. You're in a house that you never paid rent for. Where's the house, you say? What house I'm in? That which houses your personality. That which houses you. That which houses your faculties. The house is the body. You never paid for it. And you're in it. So if I was the owner, I could come and say, get out of there. You ain't paid no rent. Get out of there. You say, what do you mean? You don't own this. So if you was in a real house, and I said, you was in a house. Nobody was ever said anything to you. You're living there 10 years. Then all of a sudden I come along, I got a piece of paper, and I say, I'm the owner of this property here. All the seals and everything is right there, and you're in my house. What could you say? You couldn't say nothing. I could say, look, I tell you what, but you can stay there. You can stay there, but there's some terms. And the terms is, keep the place clean. Take care of the place. I don't want no money. Just take care of the place. And when people pass by, speak nice to people. If somebody needs something, give them something. If somebody needs a room, give them a room. You say, yeah, that's beautiful. That's a good deal. You don't want no rent? That's all I got to do? That's fine. Well, those are terms that the landlord can make. Or he can tell you to get out. So who is the landlord? Who is the Lord, the sustainer of us? Our bodies. We as people. Who gave us our faculties? Who gave us our minds? Who gave us our bodies? Who gave us our lease on life? Who gave it to us? You didn't give it to it. Don't say your mother. She didn't give that to you, because who gave it to her? Don't say Tony Blair. Don't say the Queen. Because another 15 years, she ain't going to be the Queen. Who gave it to her? There's someone that has a power to create. Someone has a power to give. Someone has a power to legislate. Somebody has the power to own, to sustain, to determine. That power, you and I are responsible to, whether you accept it or not. And you haven't paid any rent, so your rent is due. That power will, at one time or another, take back what it gave you. Take it back. And do you think that when it's taken back, you think you're just on this earth like a piece of popcorn? You just dropped out. You just here for a little while, 20 years, 30 years, whatever it is, and then you're just going to die and that's it. I'm gone. I'm finished. I did my thing. I did my little dance. I had my whatever, and I'm gone. You think that's it? That's not it. Because then you would be saying that that power, that intelligence, you were saying that that power and that intelligence would not have the same intelligence and the power as you. You planned your life. There's a reason for your life. You're going to leave something for your children. You're here in this school to graduate. And graduate, you're going to get a job and you want to get paid. And at the end, you're looking for rewards. And those that act in a criminal fashion, you expect them to be what? Punished. Fined. Punished. You accept punishments. You accept rewards. How is it that you don't accept punishments and rewards, nor do you have the prospect of punishing rewards for the one that gave you life, the one that gave you a lease on life and gave you all the things and faculties within the life? So I say that you and I have been given all of this without having to pay for it. Don't you think that it is reasonable to ask for three conditions? One, if the one that created us, the one that gave us limited power, the one that gave us limited intelligence and identity and gave all these resources and designed this world that we in, that we love it so much, do you think at least that we have the responsibility to recognize? If I was the landlord and I didn't want no money from you and I just said to you, listen, whenever I show up, at least I want you to just open up the door and recognize me and wave at me. Do you think that'd be reasonable? Of course. If I gave everybody in this room here £1,000, you didn't know I came to do that. I said, the only thing I want is that I'm going to visit this university every month. I'm just going to pass by this university and walk along the campus every month. And for this £1,000, I want everybody to wave and recognize and say, how you doing, Mr. Khalid? For £1,000. You say, is that it? So that's it. Everybody go out there and collect your money. So when I came here a month later, would you wave? Would you at least say, how you doing, Mr. Khalid? Because you would, of course you would, because you'd be wondering whether I'm going to come back here and give out another thousand. Because you got people here who are people who have given, what they call it here? They give you scholarships, right? You got people who themselves are entrepreneurs. People who are, what do they call them? People who just give money away. Philanthropists. And they give people like you £1,000, £2,000, £5,000, £10,000, give you a scholarship for research and this and so and so. And the only thing they want you to do is to reciprocate. Give up some of your time, your energy for in recognition of that foundation. And you do it. So I say, what about the foundation of life? Doesn't the foundation of life, the author of life, the author of creation, the designer, the owner, the sustainer, the one that has all the power that brought us into existence and that controls the phenomena of existence, doesn't that foundation, doesn't that power, doesn't it deserve you and I to recognize? That's one. Number two, don't you think that you would be grateful? Not just recognize me. Don't you think you would also say thank you? If I was the one to pay for your master's degree, your postgraduate, and you knew that, don't you think you would send me a letter and say thank you? If I knew you was in debt up to your neck, which you are, and I paid off all your credit cards, paid for your house and your car, because I want you to be free of debt. I don't want you to be stressful, because I want you to come work for my company clean and clear. I paid everything off. Don't you think you would write me a letter and say thank you? Of course you would. But you came into this life without debt. Came into this life with an opportunity. But I ask you, in your whole life, have you sat down by yourself? Not in a church, not in a mosque, not in a synagogue, not in a temple, not around your family, Not in front of the television, in front of the computer, not in the pub, all high somewhere. No. Have you sat down by yourself and just asked yourself and said, I don't know if there's a God. I don't know who the power is. But I do know that I am a beneficiary of life. And I just want to thank whoever it is that gave me this opportunity and brought me into this life and gave me this chance. Have you ever done that? That's called a prayer. That's called being grateful. You don't even know who to thank because you don't know if it's God or the Supreme. You don't know who it is. Yes, you would. The next thing is, would you conform to the rules? If there was a law that I set down, you were living in my house, and I laid down some rules. Would you conform to those rules to live in my house, for me to be the benefactor and take care of you? Of course you would, because you live in Great Britain, and you're very proud to have a British passport. But you have a British passport, which makes it incumbent upon you to do what? To obey. Even in this country, if you don't participate in the census, what can happen to you if you don't participate in the census? Who knows? You can go to jail just because you do not participate in the census, because the census is vital for the operation of this country. And you as a citizen have to take part. You got to conform. So I say to you, part of, it's not just recognition, not just gratitude, but also conformance. So I say the purpose, part of our purpose in this life is to honor, to recognize, to have gratitude, and to conform to the rules that are obvious and not so obvious from the one, the power, the architect, the designer who has created all of this. That person, that entity, is a sovereign above all kings of the world, is a sovereign. It is an authority, a final authority. It is a judge and an ultimate judge. It is the creator and not creation itself. In simple terms, the purpose of life is to establish a clear relationship of accountability with that creator. And that creator cannot be many creators arguing with each other. Could not be. Because then you would know how to identify. If they were arguing with each other, then they would not be supreme. You could not have four supremes. You say, I believe in four supreme gods. Or I believe in three supreme. That's an oxymoron. They all can't be supreme by virtue of the name itself. Supreme. Supreme means above all else. The creator, the sovereign, the sustainer, the author of creation has got to be a supreme sovereign, a power, accountable, an ultimate judge of everything and everyone outside of time and space. I said outside of time and space. Cannot be contained by time and space. So what is our relationship? What is our obligation in regard to the phenomena of this life? To establish a clear relationship of accountability, one that is clear and comprehensive with that creator, and to subsequently adopt a posture of recognition, gratitude, and conformance. Another way of saying recognition is to have faith and confidence. Another way of saying gratitude is to pray. Worship, supplicate. Another way to conform is to obey. To do all that is necessary to morally interact with other creatures. Yes? Not just to interact with that creator, but to morally interact with all the creatures themselves. Because the object of life is to have a beneficial. To have a beneficial and to have a balanced, a refined relationship with the creator as well as what? The creation itself. To do all that is necessary to morally interact with all creatures so as to develop harmony, peaceful coexistence, and mutual benefit, and decency. I said, yes, and decency. And what is decency? Decency is not what you consider to be decent. Decent is decent according to a sovereign determination. For instance, I could say freedom is to be wherever I want to be. If that's ultimate freedom. If you came home and I was sitting in your living room, you said, what you doing there? How'd you get in here? I just walked in here, this is where I want to be. You would not agree with me because that's your house. and you would call the police, or now you can pull out a gun and shoot me. Because it would be a consensus. I do not have the freedom to be in your house. See, so it means decency can be identified by some consensus. Also, to anticipate a final meeting, an assessment with that sovereign, because you know, inevitably, at the end of every journey, there has to be an assessment. At the end of every job, there has to be an assessment. At the end of your schooling, there has to be a test. You know that you're not here and that you're just going to get a certificate without a test. You know, you understand that you're not going to pass on and please and fulfill the purpose of life and the one that gave this life without some kind of test. So ultimately, we should anticipate that meeting. That meeting could be in a different spectrum of time. But certainly there has to be something after here. There has to be something after here. When you leave here, you're going somewhere else. When you leave this room, you're going somewhere else. When you leave this earth, you're going somewhere else. That means after here. It means here after. You and I need to anticipate the prospect of a final meeting and an assessment with that sovereign, who is also the ultimate judge, the one that will judge all the judges of the earth, and who will make a determination as to where our final destination or occupation will be. Now, I go back to my first discussion, and I said there have been philosophers, dialecticians, historians, writers, poets, sages, who have made their own propositions. And there have been other human beings called prophets and messengers who have given us a comprehensive direction and statement regarding this creature. I say to you that what Abraham said, what Moses said, and what David said, and what Isaac said, and what Ismael said, and what John the Baptist said, and what Jesus said, and what the prophet Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him, said, those prophets from the first to the last, those scriptures from the first to the last, their way of life and what they identified to be a commandment from their Lord by revelation from that creek is the best of life and the best proposition for life. That is called Islam. Why is it called Islam? It is called Islam because the word Islam means a comprehensive means of submission. It means a comprehensive means of acceptance, obedience, conformance. To acquire peace, one has to follow some form of law. You got to be following some kind of regulation. You can't get peace out of war. There has to become a time when everything becomes regulated, but through agreements, through legislation. Islam means what the Creator has designed and mandated for the creatures. And who would know better how the creatures would reach their ultimate benefit, their highest level of refinement, the best level of civilization? Who would know better how that should be done? The creatures themselves or the Creator? Those that have been designed or the designer? Those that are being sustained or the sustainer? Those themselves who are constantly making laws, reforming laws, or the one that has established laws that have never changed? I say the divine, sovereign, Lord, God is the only one that has the right to dictate to us how we can acquire peace, and we should all submit. This is what Islam means. As such, those who follow this rule called Islam. Now, I didn't say as a religion. No, I said as an order, as a system. Yes, it is a religion, but it is not just a religious observance. It is not just a set of rituals. It is what? It is a law. It is a comprehensive system. It takes in every type of part of the drama of the human beings, whether social, whether political, whether psychological, whether economic, whatever part of the drama of human beings there is, it must answer that. For the Creator would not create human beings and not give them the answer to everything. For if you bought a computer, the most sophisticated one, would it come without a manual? Would it? The most sophisticated one, would it come without a manual? No, it must. Secondly, would it come without a warranty? No, it must. Would it also not, if you had a problem, you couldn't understand it, you would have a number to call up. They call, what do they call that number? Huh? Helpline. And on the end of that helpline, who would be there? A technician to walk you through it. So this life, this world, this existence could not come about, and we could not be here by virtue of some law giver who have created this sophisticated phenomena called life without giving us a manual. Secondly, a warranty. Thirdly, a technician from time to time to walk you through, a helpline. So I say to you that the manual when Abraham came was the book that God gave to him. The manual when Moses came was called the commandments that was given to Moses, the Torah. The commandment that was the manual that was given to David was called the Psalms. The manual that was given to Jesus Christ was called the Gospel. The manual that was given to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was called the Quran. And you, if you haven't read it, you haven't followed it, you need to read those manuals to see. Compare what Jesus said, what Moses said, what Abraham said, what David said, what the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, said, and compare that with what Aristotle said, what Plato said, what Socrates said, or Hume, or Locke, or James, or Descartes, or Spinoza, or Kant, or any one of those people. Compare them. But what those men said, you'll find a different speech. You'll find a different impact. You'll find one is specialized and the other one is comprehensive. And I say to you, that the word Islam is an Arabic terminology, but it is not for the Arabs. The word Islam is an identifier, is identification for a system, a universal system, a global system for the white and the black, the tall and the short, the male and the female, the north and the south, for all the people of the world, because that creator, as he sent Abraham and Moses and Jesus, he also sent the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, with the word Islam to indicate to us that it has been perfected. Don't take my word for it. I say to you, if you don't think so, read it like you have read everything else you got. Read the Quran like you read your textbooks. You're not afraid of that textbook that you're reading. You got about 9 or 10 textbooks. You're not afraid of them. Matter of fact, you got to read them. I say to you, the Quran is available for you on the internet. Read it. Read it like you read your textbook and compare that with everything else that you have read and see what kind of answers come back to you. I say to you, if you read the Quran, you will find that that Quran is the speech of that creator. You will see that that Quran is directing you towards those technicians. You see that that Quran is providing you with a manual, a direction that answers all the questions of the phenomena of life. And if you accept that proposition of life and the answers for that proposition, if you accept that, you become a Muslim. I say you become an Arab. I say you become an Asian or an African. I say you become Bin Laden. You don't become a terrorist. No, if you read this, you yourself are in submission to what? That law. Law is called Islam. The Muslim is one that's in submission. So in that's the case, Abraham was what? A Muslim. Moses was what? A Muslim. John the Baptist was what? A Muslim. Zechariah, Noah, Isaac, Ishmael, Muslim. John the Baptist, Muslim. Jesus, Muslim. Muhammad was a Muslim. It means one who has submitted to that creator in a comprehensive fashion and is following that manual that was sent. The first of which, Abraham. The last of which, Muhammad. The first of which was given to Abraham. The last of which was given, the Quran. And the final name, the most appropriate name for that system, it is not the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution of France or the Constitution of Great Britain or the Constitution of any group of human beings. It is the Constitution of that Creator, the Divine Constitution, which is what? The Quran. I say to you, that's just a proposition. And I say to you, that proposition and the Quran and Islam will answer for you more comprehensive than anything else, the purpose of life. I dare you to check it. I dare you to go to the Quran tomorrow. I dare you to go to your computer tomorrow and punch in the word Islam and read. With an open mind, an open heart. I dare you. Put in the word Muhammad, the son of Abdullah. You think he's just somebody in the desert, some crazy man or whatever. That's what you've been taught. I dare you to read about him. I tell you, he's the man that changed the face of the world. I say to you, he's the man with the most profound behavior of all human beings that have been created in this world. I say, if you read, you compare, you will see that non-Muslims and Muslims alike said, even those that don't follow him as a prophet say, he is the most profound human being in the annals of history. That's what Michael J. Hart said. He was one of the most profound historians of this age. He said that when he made a comparison and put 27 different criteria together to examine, you understand, what human being had the greatest impact upon history and the whole annals, what is his answer? Muhammad, the son of Abdullah. He said, I would have chose Jesus Christ, but five of the categories Jesus Christ didn't fulfill. He wasn't a father. He wasn't a husband. He wasn't a warrior. He wasn't a statesman. And he did not leave a legacy and a government on this earth. He said five of the categories Jesus didn't fulfill. Had nothing to do with him being inferior. It's just that five of the categories of the 27 criteria Jesus didn't fulfill. So he said, even though I'm a Christian, I had to choose Muhammad. I say, you don't have to accept that because Michael J. Hart said. I said, look at what he said. Look what Encyclopedia Britannica said. Look what the history said. You got one of the most prestigious libraries in the world in this country. What's it called? What's that library called? The British what? That's right there on Marylebone Street there. Any one of you can go there and check it for yourself. They're one of the most prestigious libraries in the world that have stole books from every civilization. I mean, the books weren't just donated. You know that now. So you go there. You go there and you check, and I say to you, in a final note, that as a human being, as a Scottish, as an Irish, as an Anglo-Saxon, as a French, as a German, as an Indian, Chinese, whatever kind of human being you are, I tell you that Islam is the most profound system of life for all human beings. And I say to you that the Quran is the most profound scripture and manual for all human beings. And I say that Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him, if you know this man's life, check it out. His life will have the most profound impact upon you and any other human being in this whole world. That itself will complement for you, and that will answer for you, and that will substantiate for you this proposition that I've made for you concerning the purpose of life. And of course, God knows best. I'm just one man who have offered you this proposition. Thank you very much. What is the nature of our being judged and accountable unto God? Would that be simple enough? What is the nature of our accountability towards God? And ultimately, what will that render us? How will God judge? That's what you want to know.
Well, I
can't answer that part of your question because eternal life, I didn't say nothing about eternal life with God. I didn't say that. That's your perception. But I can answer what I mentioned. In other words, I would like to answer and explain something I said, but I can't answer something that you said.
So, change it slightly
for me. All right, that's good. That's simple enough. You're being judged for your actions. You're being judged for what you said, judged for what you did, judged for your interaction with creatures, human beings, and judged for your gifts that you were given, and also judged for your relationship, your dignity, your integrity with Almighty God. That's what you're being judged for. Now, this is consistent now. This is not my speech. This is consistent with what Abraham said. This is consistent with what David said and Solomon said and Isaac said and Jacob said. Consistent with what John the Baptist said. Consistent. And Jesus said, Jesus himself said, the least of you will be the least in the sight of God. And you shall not be given heaven because you pray upon me, but you shall be given heaven because you have kept the commandments. So what's the commandments? Commandments of Moses. What's the commandments of Moses? There was 10. Starting with, hear ye, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one. Going on into, you know, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not covet thy husband's neighbor's wife, so forth and so on. So there is a parameter. There is a set of laws, principles that we have to live by. These principles are our ethics. These ethics are law. these laws, if they are violated, God will judge us for those violations. If we some we have paid for in life already, some we have not paid for. Those we haven't paid for, they will be paid for. Certain debts we have paid for before we die. Those who have not been paid will be paid. A person may have killed 1,000 people and died one time. They haven't paid. Another person spent money, sacrificed 4,000 people to cause 1,000 people to live. They were only given reward, a hand clap, you understand me, or they were given some kind of a money or a house or reward. That is not a full reward. The full rewards will be with God. The full punishments will be with God. And where you will be dependent upon the nature of what God judges. That's my answer. By your good deeds. Because at the end of the day, at the end of the life, when you go inside the grave, you got nothing left. It's all gone. It's finished. Everything is done. It's not your house. It's not what you look like. It's not nothing. Everything is finished. The only thing you got left, good deeds. That's all you got left. When you come in front of God, deeds will be weighed. This is what all the prophets said. Deeds will be weighed on the day of judgment. Not words will be weighed. Not emotions will be weighed. But deeds will be weighed. Now, deeds are good and bad. Deeds will be, and who is the best to weigh? God can weigh. Just like you can judge, God can judge. Just like you can weigh, God can weigh. Just like you go in the bank and they put some coins on the scale and they can see how many notes is there, God can judge your actions. So the same way we weigh and we judge, God judges even better than that. And what does he judge? The deeds. And what will your reward be? According to the actual deeds. Now faith does play a part, but faith on the day of judgment is one element. Deeds is another element. Man shall not live by bread alone, and man will not enter heaven just by faith alone, but by actual deeds. So said the prophets of Almighty God. All the prophets of Almighty God. Okay, well let's see if we can do this. Let us take it out of the context of Jesus. Let's take it out of the context of Islam. Let's take it out of that context. So there's no back and forth about our acceptance of Jesus or rejection of Jesus at all. Well, just a moment, lady. Let's go to Jesus. Jesus said, I'm going to tell you what Islam does accept. Jesus said, I am the truth and the light. I am the truth, the way and the light. No one comes to the Father except through me. We accept that. That at that time, Jesus was the truth. He was the way and he was the light. And no one came unto God except through him. Because he was that prophet that was sent at that time. That was not an absolute statement. We believe that. Okay, and the time when Moses was there, no one came unto God. He was the truth and the light. When Abraham came, he was the truth and the light. No, I mean, I'm just figuratively, like you did, relating back to you. But I'll go to another testimony that we agree with. We don't say it's the truth, absolutely, because we can't verify. But Jesus said this, and you repeat it with me. You remember he said this. He said, our Father, who art in heaven. Did he say that? Did he say my Father? Or our Father?
Our Father.
Oh, okay. Who art in heaven? Hallowed be thy name. Did he say that?
Yeah.
He didn't say my name, and he didn't say our name. He said thy name, right? Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. Give us, meaning me, Jesus, and my mother, and all the people I'm talking to, our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us, me, my mother, my disciples, and everybody else, lead us not into temptation. And deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, not mine, not our. In case you're thinking about the Trinity and the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, he said, give, not our, thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory forever and ever. So Jesus was talking to whom? And did he say my Father or did he say our Father? So that means figuratively, all of us are what? Children of God, figuratively. Not literally, not exclusively, because Jesus was eloquent. Jesus was eloquent. He could have made it clear. My Father, who art in heaven. He didn't say our Father. So therefore, I want to say to you, you need to reread with an open mind and not apply things to Jesus as if Jesus is God and his own son. Excuse me. Again, if you ask me a question, I'm taking the time to answer to the best of my... Just a moment, lady. I'm taking the time to answer to the best of my ability, but I want to take it out of the context of a Muslim-Christian dialogue. Because the talk from the beginning, what did I start out by saying? This was not a religious proposition. I ask you, and I ask everybody here, this talk that I gave, I said this was not a religious proposition. This wasn't a philosophical proposition. This wasn't a your, my, Islam versus Christianity proposition. So I want to take it out of that. And I want to say that I was talking about the purpose of life as it applies to what Jesus said, as applied to what Moses said, as applied to what Abraham said, because I believe that all those prophets of Almighty God expressed the purpose of life the same way. Well, first I'll deal with the first, because since the Bible came first, or what was written concerning Jesus Christ came first, I'll deal with that first. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and the 15 books of Paul, those are the predominantly what is what we use as a reference for what Jesus said in the Christian world, isn't it? Predominantly. That's the New Testament. Okay. Now, the Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, who wrote after Paul, by the way, even though Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John comes first, Paul wrote first. The 15 books of Paul came first before Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's number one. The church fathers will tell you that. Those 19 books were written by individuals who never saw, never walked, never talked. I'll substantiate what I have to say before you shake your head. I'll just substantiate. Jesus Christ had 12 disciples, didn't he? Huh? The John Zebedee was one of the disciples. That's not the John that wrote. Secondly, Matthew was the tax collector, the Republican. That is not the Matthew that wrote. So those are the only two names that resemble any of the disciples of Jesus Christ. But Matthew, the tax collector, and John Zebedee, those are not the writers of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Secondly, Paul was on his way to Damascus. He was on a donkey, is right? Going on his way to do what? To find Christians, because he was a bounty hunter. And he said, I saw a light. I heard a voice. I fell off my donkey. And I saw a vision of Jesus Christ. Did he say that? Okay. Paul never saw Jesus ever in his life. Ever. Never. Walked with him, talked with him, ate with him, slept with him, learned from him at all. Ever. All Christians know that. All the Christian fathers know that. That Paul never met Jesus Christ. So I ask you the simple question. We couldn't use that as a documentation for what Jesus said, whatever Paul said in his 15 books, because Paul would not know what Jesus looked like. How could he recognize him in a vision? How would Paul see somebody in a vision and say that's Jesus if he never saw Jesus? That's one. How would he know Jesus' voice if he never heard Jesus? I go on further. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, each one of those books says according to, according to, according to, according to. No last names. The church fathers all agree. The 31 of the 39 Anglican bishops here in this country here agree that the four gospels themselves are not necessarily written by anyone that ever saw Jesus Christ, the closest of which 23 years after Jesus. So what you're relying upon, those 19 books, you're relying upon people who themselves was not eyewitnesses of Jesus Christ at all. Now we got those who were the eyewitnesses. Those were called the Nazarenes. They were never called Christians. During the life of Jesus Christ, he never told anybody to call himself Christian. They were the Nazarenes, meaning the people who followed that man from where? Nazareth. Okay, so now here we got one, eyewitnesses, who is what? The disciples. Then on the other hand, you got the 15 books of Paul and the four books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which developed later on into the Council of Nicaea, the mandate called the Council of Nicaea by Constantine, the first church of Rome. So there, no eyewitnesses. On the other hand, when we go to the Quran, it was not written by the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him. The Quran was never written. But in the life of the Prophet, as Jesus claimed that what he heard from God, that's what he spoke. As Muhammad claimed what he heard from God, that's what he spoke. What is the difference? The Quran was memorized by at least 14 of the companions of the Prophet Muhammad in his life. And preserved until now. Every dot and every word. So therefore we have a reference. Not something that was written by the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him, but something that was preserved from that Prophet that we can make reference to. And now, why does the Quran explain things, even though it was revealed 1,424 years ago, how does it explain things that took place right now and explain things that are happening now? Because God, who is outside of time and space, can explain something 1,500 years ago, because 1,500 years ago don't mean anything to God. The difference between the Bible and the difference between the Quran is that both were originally, what was given to Jesus was originally a revelation from Almighty God, but it was lost, it was changed. The Quran was never lost, it was never changed. That's just a general answer to your question. Well, whether it's fair or not is another issue, but if you're asking me, do they have to recognize? I say that whoever has eyes, if they look at the sun, they have to recognize it. You got eyes, you look at the sun, you have to recognize that it is the brightest thing, and you can't look directly at it without sunglasses. So, if you are a human being having intellect, and you are a human being understanding the faculties that you have, and you are a human being knowing well that you are not the benefactor of what gifts you have been given, even though there are tests and tragedies in life, always the benefits of life outweigh the tests and the tragedies. That is what, by consensus, human beings will all accept, that the tests, the trials, the confrontations, the difficulties themselves are not outweighed by the gift of life itself. So I say, if life is a gift, and everything that you've been given in life is a gift, don't you think that anyone that receives a gift, as magnanimous as life is, should owe some kind of gratitude to the one that gave them that gift? Let's be a little more specific, if you don't mind, rather than be abstract. I'm talking to you. If a gift is given to you, a magnanimous gift, if your eyesight was taken away from you suddenly, and some doctor came up with a maneuver that gave you back your eyesight, would you say thank you? Would you feel obligated to say thank you?
In that example, eyesight being a very positive and useful thing, something like that, definitely.
Okay, but I'm just.
Came to me on the street, gave me half a pound of cocaine, and said, "My friend."
No, okay, I'm just my friend. I'm just trying to be, rather than for you to talk about a third party, I want to deal first with you.
Okay.
You see, if you didn't have water, and your throat, swelled up, and you couldn't even swallow, a person who gave you a drink of water, you would be grateful. Not just eyesight, not life, not all the gifts of life. Because gratitude is a part of the ethics of human beings, wheresoever they are. A child will be grateful for what is given. Now, as for a person who is born crippled or blind or one of the tsunami victims or whatever, what they would think, that's being abstract. You're talking about a third party.
With your water, I would have the choice to say, no, thank
you. You sure would. You're correct, my brother. You're right. You didn't ask to be created, my friend, but you also are benefiting from what you've been given. You see, you're chewing gum. And you wouldn't be able to chew gum if there wasn't at least 16 muscles inside, you understand me, your face that allowed you to do that. Okay, you're thinking and you're asking articulate questions. You wouldn't be able to think those articulate questions if you had not been given that instrument called the brain and the tongue. You're looking, you're seeing. I mean, everything is working. You are giving gifts that you didn't ask for. Of course you were born here, but you are using it. Now I say this, if I found a person living in a house, living there, using it, and I come along and say to you, this is my house, and you got to pay the back rent for living in this house for the last 10 years, you could say to me, well, look here, it was given to me. Nobody told you to let me live in here. No, but if you are using something, there is an obligation upon you, there's an accountability upon you to sustain it and to show some kind of remuneration for it. Gratitude is just one remuneration that I spoke about. And I'm just being very fundamental that I think that almost any human being, anywhere, under whatever condition, and just for your information, I have visited some places where people were under a tragedy like the tsunami. And you know what I found? Those people in those situations tend to be more grateful than the people who have the sophisticated means and resources available to them. crippled people, blind people, people that are in situations that are born, you know, something with less fortune than you and I, wouldn't articulate things like that. They are still very grateful to have what they have. So I would differ with you. I would say that generally almost every human being, at least those who are the least intellectual, would be grateful if anything is given to them, and they would be grateful just to live. Most human beings would not prefer to die under whatever conditions. Most. But in extraordinary circumstances, some human beings under desperation feels there's nothing for them to live for. I think that's a tragedy. That doesn't apply to the norm of human beings. I was speaking about the norm, that most of us would be grateful for the gift of life.